I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. I'm really happy I get to talk to Dawn Wetrick. This is so exciting. Dawn, I listen to your podcast, I listen to everything, but I kind of want to tell everyone about you. Can I do that first?
Sure.
Sure. This is all about you. You know that, right?
Okay. Well, I'm flattered. Thank you.
Okay. Dawn Wetrick is the CEO and founder of Start Ed Up. I got that right, right?
Yes.
I better make sure I say these things right. He's author of Pure Genius, Building a Culture of Innovation and Taking 20% Time to the Next Level. I know a lot of teachers are going to want to hear about that. And you're an innovation specialist at Noblesville High School in Central Indiana.
Yes.
Yeah, you're in Indiana. Great. Okay, Dawn is known for his award-winning work as a middle school and high school teacher. He's an educational innovation consultant and an educational speaker. And I have been following you on social media, I think, since I started.
Yeah.
I think so.
We probably started around similar times.
I think so. And I really, really enjoy learning from you and your podcast. Since I don't know, you realize I have two businesses and a startup. So down the road, we'll talk. All right.
Okay.
So now, because you do all the podcasts, it's my turn to interview
you. This is weird. Yeah.
It's really weird. So Dawn, I always start with, tell us a little bit about you, your family, where you live, kind of what it's like there where you live.
Sure. Yeah. So I've actually been in the Indianapolis area all my life. And actually I love it because we are the crossroads of America, quite literally. And my dad was a teacher. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And that also makes her a teacher. And we traveled all my life. And by travel, I mean usually by pop-up camper, always on a budget. But I think that was one of the things that was instilled in me, that the best money you can spend is on A, your loved ones, and B, on memories. And so we traveled a lot. Like every summer it was a road trip somewhere. And so, I've been blessed to do that. And then my dad, probably my favorite quote from the book, is that everybody in my family was in education, and my sister is a deaf education teacher. And so I promised myself the last thing I'd be is a teacher because, you know, I wanted to be different than everybody from my family. But like sometimes happens, you also want to, you know, that genetic code kicks in. And so I wanted to be like my dad. And so after 3 years of not being a teacher out of college, and I had a good job, it was the weird thing, but I told him I was going to go back and get my degree. And so he told me what I think at the heart of innovation is. He's like, you know, Donnie, I don't care if you go on and teach for the next 20 years. Please don't teach 1 year 20 times. And that has stuck with me to this day because I don't do anything the same way twice. What works, I'll repeat. But what doesn't work, I always, you know, adjust. Or as they say in the overly cliched terms of Silicon Valley, you pivot. I was raised by teachers and love education, kind of. I see some of the glaring flaws with it. And so I also have that, you know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem kind of thing too. So, I started this wacky, weird class, after watching a TED talk from Daniel Pink. Was that been 7 years ago? And, you know, what he talked about on what motivates people, I thought, why not give that a shot at a high school level? And, we've been experimenting and doing strange things. And I'll just give a warning is that if it comes across like I'm bragging about my students, I am, because they've done some amazing things. And I'm absolutely proud that I teach for Noblesville High School, which is a district just on the, you know, outskirts of Indianapolis, and they've given me an opportunity to do some really interesting things, and at times, you know, say some things that aren't necessarily popular either. I'm deeply concerned about what we're not doing in education, and at the same time, also I know we're going to dive deep into this. I don't think that innovation is the be all end all. Matter of fact, you cannot be innovative if you don't know how to read or write. If you don't understand and appreciate history, if you don't know math, I still think that a large part of our standards are there for a reason. But I do strongly believe that there should be a part of your school day that is centered around innovation and entrepreneurship.
Well, we're going to get into all of that because I mean, you know, I got into teaching because I wasn't really happy with education. I mean, you know, you were saying how you're, you know, there, everyone was an educator, but why did you go into it after that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Part of it is that I wanted to be the dad that my dad was. And I should also say my mom, but, you know, I'm a male. And so I wanted to be that dad. And so, so I will say, you know, part of it was to spend time with my children. I knew I wanted to be a really good father. And the current position I had didn't really look like it was going to be as family friendly. So, you know, there's no shame in saying it. Partly it was the schedule. But secondly, is because, you know, I was engrossed in this stuff. And my dad always had an optimistic view of education, which I think was interesting because my dad never badmouthed education. Ironically, I do kind of, or at least I pick out some points that I want to improve. But he was very upbeat about things, and yet he also wanted, he kept it fresh. So, I don't know. I think a lot of teachers come from teachers. It's a strange phenomenon, but I just wanted to be like that. And then, quite frankly, I'm a learner. So a lot of times I get to participate. You know, in the class that I'm in, this innovation class is crazy in the sense that a lot of what goes on here, I have no idea how they're doing what they're doing, but I'm learning along with them. Like the class is about 7-ish, 8-ish weeks long on some of our techniques we use to do the innovative creative process. But a lot of times when they're working on their own projects, I'm over there going, well, that's cool. How did that work? So I think a curiosity has always been a part of my, you know, genetic code, so to speak.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, they pushed you. Yeah, your parents were really, and what I love is, I mean, it's good to be optimistic, but when you want to see change happen, and sometimes the system doesn't let you do that, it's kind of nice that you can be the kind of one pushing it, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's also the difference between my dad and I, is that I have a little bit more of my mom's confrontational side. that my mom and I used to get into these legendary arguments, and we'd always end it with how much I love you and all that other stuff. But we enjoyed a good debate. Let's just put it that way. And my dad was more the passive. My dad's just a really agreeable, nice person. And so I'm hopefully trying to blend those two. Let's just put it that way.
So. Well, I like that. And, you know, you did teach middle school. I was a middle school teacher, and I always felt that was kind of what got me going because they were the tough ones. They were the tough ones, you know?
Yeah, you know, and I miss it. I remember my first year, I thought it was so strange because my, you know, the first day of school in middle school, they would rush in and they'd tell you all these cool things that happened over the break. And when I started high school, the first thing that they did was not talk. You know, they did the, I don't want to be here, the eye roll. And of course, that first year, obviously, there was no personal relationship built because they didn't know who I was. But, you know, it was, that whole middle school, you know, excitement and just the social aspect of it. So, I miss middle school. As weird as it sounds, people are like, oh my gosh, you taught middle school. Yeah. Taught 10 wonderful years of middle school and loved it.
Oh, 10 years. I didn't know that. Yeah. So that's really, I mean, because I find that many of the people I'm talking to were either music teachers or middle school teachers. You know, there's something about that DNA where you don't mind challenging yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool. So let's talk about the innovation class you do. I mean,
sure.
It sounds so interesting. I'd like to know what the kids are doing and how you set it up.
Yeah. Again, the genesis story is that I watched a TED Talk and Dan was talking about the fact that people aren't driven. People in the adult world aren't necessarily driven by money. They're driven by mastery, autonomy, and purpose. And what he talked about was the lure of money didn't necessarily put people over the top. So I was like, okay, our unit of monetization in school is grades. Do kids work for grades or do they work for the sake of learning? And it's at its most optimal, we like to think that kids learn for the sake of learning, but that's also where I threw the hard way. realize that they are convinced they are working for the grade. Our students looked at a grade, and they really even looked at school as something they had to get through, not something to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'll sit here and I'll pretend like I'm interested. I will tell you the things that you want to hear. And in exchange, I'll get a good grade. And in exchange, I'll go to a good college. And then all my problems will go away. And that's when I really started peeling back the layers of the onion and going, oh my gosh, this isn't learning. This is just an exercise in compliance. That students aren't here because they want to. They're here because they have to. And that learning environment is absolutely toxic. So tangent.
I have to say something. I've been writing about that, about compliance and learned helplessness and the idea mm-hmm. of just tell me what the grade, you know, I just want to get an A kind of attitude.
No, it's a double-edged sword too, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's some things, I mean, this is where, you know, Monica Duckworth, you know, grit. Okay. There is grit and I understand that, but there are sometimes when you fundamentally hate something, it's not grit. It's just outright compliance. You know, grit is getting through something. Well, and again, I think one of my favorite courses in college I was forced to take, and I'm glad I was forced to take it because I liked it so much. However, again, this is why I'm asking just for a small part in the day to be driven by innovation, because I still have them get through tasks that they may or may not like, but it's driven by some of their interests. Matter of fact, I've always said that the hardest things in the world to do are the things that you said that you're going to do. Like, you know, every New Year's, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to read a book a month. These things are difficult because it's what you decided. Being told what to do is easier. And that's mm-hmm. why what I do is really, really difficult. On paper, it seems easy. You teach a class where they're allowed to do what they want. Well, technically, it's 7 weeks of training of learning how, you know, learning how to think for yourself and learning how to reframe problems and learning how to collaborate, blah, blah, blah. Yes, then after that, they can do as they see fit. But it's that learning as they see fit is the hard part. Really, really hard part.
Can I just stop you for just, I know you're going to go on, but you just hit on something that I've been trying to wrap my hands around, it because the idea of I'm like this, I make all these wonderful lists of all the things, especially now, you know, with resolutions for the new year and everything.
Yeah.
You're always going to lose weight, or you're going to stop eating something, or you're going to do something. It is the hardest thing because it's something that's, you know, you're challenged. So is that how you took this idea of challenging yourself to the next level where they got to, they had the time to take risks and
well, play? It's been a progression. And honestly, like, what I have fallen in love with, and we'll probably get into why I have a podcast, is that I started falling into this cult of doers. The more I got deep into this class, the more I realized how much I was scratching the surface. Matter of fact, I'll give a lot of credit. I mean, Dan actually helped us get our start, and I credit him because the class wasn't approved quite yet until Dan started giving us some feedback, and then our principal thought it was cool that Daniel Pink was getting back with us. But after that, it was Tina Seelig at Stanford University, which is kind of funny because I've got some bones to pick with the university system right now anyway. But aside from that, Tina is just wonderful. And learning from her and some of these other great people is kind of when I kept going layers deep. So at first, it was kind of like this creativity class. And then that creativity class has been driven more towards understanding the difference between creativity and innovation. And then my life's journey in the last year and a half has been, okay, cool idea, bro. What are you going to do with it? And that's the difference between innovation and entrepreneurship. Like, if you're sitting on something amazing, who cares if it's innovative? If you don't bring it to the world, it's just innovative. It's just a cool idea. Like, I don't give a flying anything about your idea. Bring it to the world. Mm-hmm. And I don't care whether you're 8 years old or 80, you have an ability to bring something to the world. That's entrepreneurial.
Wow.
And so that's one of the things that I've really been driving home. Because there's a whole lot of buzzwords around education that I just can't sometimes deal with. And so we fall in love with a buzzword, or we fall in love with a an ed tech tool, but we're not preparing our kids for what's coming. And what's coming is the data. And the data says in 2 years, by 2020, this is a lot of surveys that have been done, but I've seen everywhere between 45 to 55% of the world's jobs will be gig-related or freelance. So who's going to find those jobs? People that understand how to find patterns. Mm-hmm. People that understand where the trends are going. People that understand that opportunities are everywhere. Innovators, creatives. Mm-hmm. And if that's the number one thing that's out there, why in the name of God aren't we doing that to prepare them? Oh, no, we're going to sit them and make them memorize one more thing. Oh, my gosh. Could we please have a serious conversation about the fact that the world is moving towards this? Like, and this is when, boy, here I go, Barbara. I do this every time. I sound so damn arrogant when I say this. But my class and what it stands for, I think, is among the most important things that we can be doing right now in education. And again, that's not to say that everything else isn't important. It is. I want kids to be able to learn and read and do math and appreciate history. But if you're not doing anything with the knowledge you have, then no one cares now.
Oh, God. I'm sitting here going, I want to be part of this. This is all the reason why I'm still doing this. I'm still doing this because when you're teaching, you know, in isolation, or you're teaching single subjects that don't even relate to anything in their world, and we need to open the door and look at even developing entrepreneurial activities, things where they have to search for a real meaning in their lives. So we never got up to what you're doing.
So, yeah, I mean, that's basically what we do. I mean, mm-hmm. the class is called Innovation and Open Source Learning. Innovation part takes about 6 to 8 weeks. We learn different techniques. We learn how to reframe. And I don't even want to say the design school process, because there's some different things that we do. But, you know, it's still going through seeing a problem, talking about it, seeing it as an opportunity. You know, you have that whole what could you do about it, that's called the rapid prototype or whatever you want to call it. We have our own method called the Roth IRA, which is funny because it's also a cool tax savings advantage vehicle. Anyway, but, you know, we have our process that we kind of have a 2 week flow of everything. And we put a heavy emphasis on reflection and things of that nature. And so the class, therefore, after you learn the skills of innovation, and I say that with a wink and a nudge because you're always learning, but after you've been through somewhat of a process and we've given you tools and we understand that you need to harness social media, not abuse it, after that's over, then it's open source learning. So I no longer teach you, I help you. It's a complete flipped model. Like, they don't work, I mean, they don't work for me, I work for them. So if a student's like, hey, I really want to invent this thing and it's going to involve a lot of engineering, well, it's my job to either find the tools for them or help them find great mentors and open source their learning.
Wow.
And so whether they're local or virtual, then, and if you've ever seen my Twitter feed, mm-hmm. half of it is like, I'm showcasing, like, one of my students has a, you know, has a YouTube show on anxiety and depression and his faith-based approach to it. So you'll see some of my tweets. Hey, check out, you know, Hunter's video or Sarah's new podcast, or check out the new event that my students threw. Now, some students don't want the help or need the help, and that's fine. But I'm also making connections. Hey, so-and-so, will you help out my student? That's one of the other reasons why I like doing the podcast so much, because, you know, a kid will listen to it and like, hey, Wetrick, that guy that you just interviewed last week, do you think that he'll or she'll talk to me? Yes, they probably will. So is basic. That's a really long answer, but that's the class, you know, 7 to 8 weeks of innovation training and then the rest of the year of open source learning and then doing something. And yes, I put a high, high premium on entrepreneurship. I don't grade you down if you don't, but I highly encourage that if you're onto something innovative, you might as well bring it to the masses.
So you call it enabling student-led entrepreneurs as part of, you even have that part of your start ed up, you know, that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's funny. That's why started up also exists. And this is, depending on when this airs, we're having a launch here soon. we're giving a lot of help. Probably the number one group that we've heard from are homeschool parents who want this for their children. So we're going to have some resources for them.
Is it going to be, you know, we make a blog post after I get your help. We put a blog post to this, so we can put a whole bunch of links in to the resources. Okay. That'll be great. Sure. But I mean, I love the idea of helping homeschool parents or any parent, because learning shouldn't happen just in school anyway.
No, I matter of fact, I remember when he said this, I had an author, Seth Godin, and he was quick to say, Don, every child should be homeschooled, just some get home at 3 o'clock. And I was like, whoa, yes, because all three of my kids are homeschooled, but they all get home around, well, Ava swims so much. But most of my other two get home at 3, and he's absolutely right. So I loved that approach.
You never mentioned your kids. How old are they?
And so let's start off from the, like, it all starts with Alicia. I have a wife that I don't understand why she said yes to me, but she did. And we started dating as sophomores in high school, so it's pretty committed now. So too late, Alicia. No, Alicia has been my unbelievably stunning, awesome bride of 26 years, and she is I can't do any of this without Alicia. And so I have a beautiful wife named Alicia. My oldest daughter is Ava, and she will be 17 in late January. I have a middle daughter, Anna, and she is 13. And then I have my son is 8, and he's bringing balance to the force. Let's just say that.
What's his name?
Grant.
Grant?
Yep. Grant, Ava, and Anna.
Yeah, they're spread out a little bit, which is good.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So you have one in elementary, one in middle, and one in high school.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's really kind of interesting.
Oh, it's a blast, honestly. Like, we have, like, I'm so unbelievably blessed to have children that, A, they love each other, and which is good. And they don't have a choice, but, like, we do a lot of things together.
Well, it sounds like from when you talked about your parents, they did a lot with you. And traveling, and you were brought up in that environment, and you saw the power, and I think that you said some really amazing things in the beginning, so I got to remember them. But they were what I love is that learning happens all the time.
Oh yeah, well, it's a great point, Barbara. So actually, this is part of my homeschool course. We have a thing. This class, and if my students were here, they'd roll their eyes because they hear it so much. Opportunities are everywhere, right? So when everybody else is in, I think we're in a complaint culture, by the way. Everybody's complaining. No one's doing anything about it. So in the Wetrick household and in this class, we'll often ask ourselves, okay, observe. What could you bring to the situation? So oftentimes when the Wetricks are together, I'll say, okay, girls, like I'm not going to name the restaurant, but we just went to a new kind of chain-ish restaurant. And I said, all right, tell me what you guys think. And they're so used to this exercise. They're like, okay, right when I entered, the lighting was dim. The people that were behind the counter, one seemed enthusiastic. The others did not. If I ran the place, I would, there's one chain that you're expected to say, hey, and you're like, welcome. And they're like, they need to work on that. Their menu was good. And they started, they're like, if the manager would have come over and like, hey, how's your meal? Anna would have probably been like, okay, your lighting is a little dim. make sure that you, and they would have done so in a loving way. But like, those opportunities, even as a family, to be observant and say, and not to complain, because then, after they complain, we'll ask them, okay, what would you do differently? Because I want my kids to scan the world on what they could improve, not just to complain about something. Like, okay, so why is the lighting dim? Well, it's because they had that communal seating, and actually she didn't say dim. I take that back. Sorry, Anna. She said the lights were very low. Because they had those lights, they had the communal tables, and the lights were very low to the table, and therefore it was kind of dim. And so she was looking for opportunities to improve it. Because we loved the food and we wanted to see the restaurant survive. And so she's thinking compassionately, how could I bring value to them. And so I think the same thing. Whenever you're traveling as a family or you have students, I think it's just really great to observe from time to time and say, okay, what would you do to make things different or better around here?
Well, I was brought up like that. So I'm very, very lucky. I had parents who questioned us and had us question and be skeptical, but also come up with, you know, look and observe at things and talk about it. Not many people have that. So the idea of even modeling it and sharing it and letting kids who don't have the same opportunities know, and even family, that when you talk about homeschool parents and or any parent, that is, if they could just change some of the things that they do, it changes the relationship.
Yep. Well, and sorry, I'm getting really personal. Hopefully she doesn't mind. but like we have a thing called Active Compassion that like we've asked our girls and our little guy that you can actively be compassionate too. I mean, the warning signs are always there when somebody's having a bad day. And ironically enough, this is almost borderline a selfish thing to do. But we ask our kids to be a light to somebody else, that if it looks like they're having a bad day, you know, saying something nice. I even do this with my own class, or at least I put this out as a challenge. I can't really check on them. But I personally send an email or a DM of gratitude every night, and it cannot be the same person. Because seriously, there's going to be an ugly side to this, and I'm going to get to that in a second. No. I should say a selfish side to this. But I want my children to scan the world for either A, what is right, or B, how they can be helpful. And here's the selfish part, because it always comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a good person, when you have had a bad time, you can count on others. And I not to do it for selfish reasons. Like, I never say, hey, Ava, go out there and help somebody today so tomorrow they can give you $5. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-mm.
But when you can be a blessing on others, you start to build up a reputation for being a blessing on others. And I think that when you then have some times of need, people will line up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to say that should be your ulterior motive. But I think we're such an ugly, toxic culture of only sending out negative tweets on what sucks or so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that. I want my innovators to be the exact opposite. I want them to use social media to go, hey, I saw your thing and blah, 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 and I loved it. Now, even if they wanted to give them positive feedback, you've opened up the door to be nice, and they go, oh my gosh, what did you think? Well, I may have improved this, but I loved that. Or, you know, just... You know, I even told them, like, you know, send a DM a night. And they're like, well, after like the third week, we'd have a hard time. I'm like, that's exactly the whole point. Like, by the second week, you've sent one to your mom, your dad, your aunt, your uncle, your best friend, whatever. And then after like 15 days, you're like, dang, who am I going to send it to? Then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, some kid dropped his book bag and you saw somebody pick up. Instead of laughing at him, there was one girl that said, oh, let me help you. Send a DM to that girl. Sit there and go, oh my gosh, you were so, when everybody else was laughing, you were great. I don't even hardly know you, but I saw what you did and I think it's awesome. You have now planted a seed that will last probably a lifetime. Yeah. If you start doing that, then everything changes.
Well, okay, so you mentioned DM. Some people might not know what we're talking about. It's direct message on Twitter.
Yeah.
So
or Facebook, or LinkedIn, or
any kind of social media. Do your kids then? That means that they're all involved in social media.
All of them.
Okay.
And I think this is digital citizenship. Like, and I'm not bad mouthing. Like, there's a lot of programs that the whole digital citizenship is a list of things that you should not do on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Most of our kids already know what they shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know. But I like to also give my students a list of things that they probably should do. And I don't command it, but I'm like, hey, if you want to be successful, and the reason why DMs are great is, you know, if you start making these public messages, it looks like you're showboating, which we can go down that, which...
You know, Another time.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's just it. Like, sometimes, like, we self-promote a lot because we think that we should show what our students are doing anyway. But by sending them a personal message, a direct message, is less social pressure on them to take the compliment. And then, people will think that you're showboating less.
Well, I have to kind of take this to a close because we keep it at a certain point. But this was...
I'm so sorry. I went off on so many different tangents.
Do you know that this was fun?
I had fun.
There's a whole movement on passion and kindness and paying it forward. You kind of pulled that in. There's a lot of people that are talking about entrepreneurship and innovation, but they're not doing it right. And you showed and gave ideas. You're talking about parents and then also being a light. The whole thing about compassion. I mean, these are the things that I want to talk about. I want to write about. That's what and you mentioned planting seeds. That's the whole idea of my podcast. It's
almost like we had this planned, and we didn't, for the record.
We didn't. It did sound like it, Don.
Matter of fact, you sent me some notes on things we might talk about. We've gotten to like none of them, but that's okay.
This was perfect. We're going to put links to your books. We're going to put links to your podcast. And it's started up?
Yeah.
That's how you say it? I was saying started up.
It's funny because, I wanted it to sound almost like a certain Rolling Stones song. But yeah, we treat education like a startup. And it's just kind of a side project. And yeah, the podcast of the same name, Started Up Podcast. And the book is Pure Genius. And that's our crazy, that was like the first 2 years of me trying this class. And yeah.
So there's another book probably coming out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're going to have to come bring you back, talk about that book. Don, this was amazing. I just feel like I've known you forever. We've never talked. This is the first time we talked, really. So I'm so grateful that you took the time with me.
Let me put that right back on you then, because I think that what you're doing is, let's just state the obvious. I mean, neither of us are 20 years old, right? We're adapting to the new media, and neither of us are 20 years old. And so I love that. I love that your approach is that of a cool millennial. But I also like the fact that you're transparent in your journey and that you are wanting to do positive things. You're not one of those persons that is a blowhard. You're not putting out little quotes and the quote is you. You're being positive, and I dig that. So good on you, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, Don, you called me a millennial. I'm a baby boomer.
No, I know. I said you're acting like a millennial. A good millennial.
You just made my whole day.
There you go.
Thank you. Oh, this was wonderful. And I can't wait to pull it all together and publish it because it's going to be wonderful. Thank you so much, Don.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Barbara.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning Podcast and my conversation with Don Wetrick. Look for a complimentary blog post about Don with resources and links. I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and retweet the post on Twitter using the hashtag Rethink_learning. And please subscribe to the podcast and my website at barbarabray.net so you can join the conversations.